Choosing where to go to university is a big commitment.
By choosing to study at the University of Central Lancashire, you'll be choosing a place that will support you as you step into your future.
You'll be choosing a new place to call home.
We see our students for who they are and who they can be.
We see opportunity.
We see potential.
We see you.
There's still time to apply for a degree through Clearing.
Visit uclan.ac.uk/clearing to find out more.
Hello and welcome to this Sunday edition of the Eurocopa podcast. I'm your host, Nipun Chopra. Thanks for joining us tonight. Today we'll review the now completed quarterfinals of Copa America, as well as update you on the way things look in the European Championships. And in order to do that, as well as talk more US men's national team, I'm joined by Karthik Krishnayar and Robert Hay. First of all, everyone listening out there, happy Father's Day. And we have to acknowledge here that since the start of the Eurocopa podcast, Robert is now a new father for the third time. Is that right, Robert?
That's correct, yes.
So how did you celebrate Father's Day today, Robert?
Well, I celebrated by convincing my kids to watch the Albania-Romania match with me. Which maybe not the highlight, you know, maybe not what everybody does usually on Father's Day, but right. You know, they got some enjoyment out of seeing the uniforms. So
basically, you watch soccer today, which, to be honest, is about as ideal a day as possible for the present company, right, Karthik? That's all we would love to do on any holidays, just watch soccer.
That's all we do anyway.
The sadness in Karthik's voice is palpable.
Robert's kids are learning the hard way.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
All right, gentlemen, let's talk about Copa now. So we talked about, after the U.S. men's national team, when we talked about that game, we found out who they are playing, and it's none other than arguably the best attacking team in the world right now, which is Argentina. And let's talk about that game. Robert, let's start with Argentina's win. It was a 4-1 win. And the way I look at it, Argentina were exceptionally good for about 75 minutes. It was the early Higuain goal that set them on their way. And then, interestingly, at 2-0, it was Sergio Romero who kept them in the game. And we'll talk about what happened with the PK and stuff. But it was a bit of a mixed bag with Argentina, but realistically, they were always going to win this game, weren't they?
Yeah, you felt that way, especially early on. I mean, we've been talking about Higuain since the beginning of this podcast, and how his quality is and what he brings to this tournament. And what we saw in this match was just basically how good he is. The assist from Leo Messi to set up his first goal, and then just the finish there. He's a world-class striker and showing it off in this tournament. So and you're right, you know, just that threat, that constant threat from Argentina's attackers was there, that always made you feel like even if the score was 2-1 or it got a little bit close, that Argentina would be able to pull it away. So they bossed this game from the big, you know, for the first 3/4 of this match. And then Romero, you know, you all talked about, would he be on form, not getting as much playing time, you know, how would he play for the national team? He truly looked like he was in the middle of his club season with some of the saves he made. Mm-hmm. At one, the try of the chip over his head, I yelled at my wife to come back into the room because she missed the save of the tournament,
right?
I thought. But, yeah, I mean, Argentina looked like not only the best attacking team, but arguably the best team in the world. And that's a very scary proposition for a U.S. team that's going to be missing some players coming up this week.
Yeah, we'll talk about that preview here in a minute, but Karthik, let's stick with Argentina here. Romero does give up a PK in spite of those exceptional saves, and then one of the worst PKs you'll see, another missed Panenka. It looks great when you pull it off, but when it doesn't, you look like an absolute idiot. And they'll have the feeling there that had that goal gone in, had it gone to 2-1 before halftime, this could have been a different outcome.
Yeah, because I felt like Venezuela was really getting into the game at that point, right? I mean, it felt like they were gaining a foothold. They were overwhelmed. They were awed by the occasion, whatever the case, in the first 20-25 minutes, and they really began to get a feel for the match at that point. That Miss Panenka, and you're right. When you pull it off, it's brilliant. We rave about Pirlo pulling it off in the Euros in 2012, was it?
Mm. I think that's right.
He did it, it became a fad again, a sensation once again.
Yeah.
When you miss it, it just sucks the air out of your team. So that's that was a tough one for Venezuela, but they still had a very good tournament getting to this stage. And in Argentina's case, they keep motoring on. We're waiting to see if they can actually close the deal in this tournament, and it's going to be tough to write the analysis of Argentina mm-hmm. until this tournament is done. We can analyze other sides as the tournament progresses based on expectations.
Right.
Argentina's sole expectation was to win this Copa, and they're progressing nicely toward that goal. They haven't had any real hiccups yet in that aim. Whereas everybody else in the tournament has had some difficulty somewhere. Yet it seems like unfinished, unfulfilled business. One thing I do want to point out, though, is I think when you've got Messi playing like this and you've got Higuain, who's coming off a great club season in this form, it's very tough to defend them. And I think the U.S. is going to have a hard time as far as the tactical matchups on Tuesday.
Yeah, I agree with that. And maybe Karthik's right, Robert, that we can't really analyze Argentina as a whole. So let's talk about some specific players here. And I said on the last podcast, or maybe two podcasts ago, that I thought Angel Di Maria would be a huge miss. I mean, yesterday, Nicolas Gaitán was incredible. He played that role Di Maria plays down the left, was pretty much unplayable. And what's frightening about this Argentina team, Robert, is that even when Gaitán himself pulled up with a possible hamstring injury, you had Eric Lamela come in for him. So this team is a real is filled with some incredible individual players.
Yeah, and you're right, and that's really where the depth comes in. And there's some talent. If somebody's not producing, or someone's injured, or you would be suspended for some reason, they have someone else who can come in and either change the look or contribute. To touch on Kartik's point as well, Leo Messi was a goal threat, no doubt, in this match, but he was also providing, as I mentioned, some great assists for Higuain. And so the scoring threats come from everywhere. The contributions, for setting up goals are coming from a lot of different places. If one player is off, another player will step up. And it's Argentina responding to basically what that expectation is. I think that's maybe what the most impressive thing is about them right now is the expectation is to win. That's what they're supposed to do in this tournament. And what they're showing right now is the players want to win. The coaching staff is playing this smart and playing it well, and they haven't had any hiccups. So even though we can't judge them yet, they are responding to expectations or meeting what I guess the expectations would be to this point, which is looking forward to winning this tournament. So they've been impressive to watch. The contributions from around the field have been impressive. Maybe what we want to see from the U.S. match is who's going to be the star player in this match for Argentina. And that'll be – it may be somebody that we expect. Maybe it'll be Messi again, or maybe it'll be someone else completely. And that's kind of the scary thing about this team is who's going to be the next contributor that's going to get the star of the game.
Yeah, another example of that ridiculous depth is, of course, Karthik's beloved Sergio Aguero coming on for Higuain. Aguero, in his own right, one of the best five strikers in the world, is coming in for another one of the best five strikers in the world. And, of course, they're playing ahead of someone unknown, Leo Messi. Karthik, let's talk about that semifinal now. When we analyzed Leicester City last year, you, me, Richard, pretty much everyone focused on those one-on-one matchups all throughout the pitch. I think anyone who's maybe not an American Outlaw supporter will agree that the U.S. team will lose every one-on-one matchup on that, at least on paper, against that Argentina team. So what is the blueprint for the U.S. men's national team to win this game? Because it's not those one-on-one matchups. It has to be some tactical innovation.
Right. So, of course, the U.S. beat Spain in a competitive match 7 years ago. I need to point that out. And that was Spain's only loss in about a three-year period. And what happened in that match, and there was an exceptional player by the name of Charlie Davies on the counterattack, which the U.S. doesn't have. Maybe Bobby Wood could have provided that. Maybe Jaius Cesardos can provide that. But what Bob Bradley did in that match was he set up two lines of four, and he essentially had his center backs, his fullbacks pinch in. So conceding the flanks of letting Iniesta while running even the overlapping runs from Capdevila and Jordi Alba. I can't remember if it was Jordi Alba at the time, but whoever from Spain, allowing that to happen, but just defending in numbers in the area. So when the crosses came in or when Iniesta tried to dribble into the area or quick passing, there were guys in the way, right? There were enough bodies down the spine of the pitch. Now, I'm not sure Klinsmann is going to do that. And part of the reason he can't do that, or it's going to be difficult to do it, is Jermaine Jones being out, right? So you're probably going to turn to Beckerman. Then you're going to have to make a decision as to your replacement for Bedoya. Bedoya was very important defensively on Saturday against whenever that game was, Thursday against Ecuador, in pinching back and doing a lot of covering for Fabian Johnson. So you're probably replacing him with a Zusi or a Nagby, and then you don't have the great counterattacking threat like Bobby Wood. So the 2009 playbook of how the U.S. beat Spain is the quickest thing that comes to mind in this sort of game, one-off game in a tournament. However, the U.S. doesn't necessarily have the personnel. The U.S. would have the personnel to pull it off again if not for the suspension. So what happens? I think you have to put your best 11 tactical or best 10 tactical field players out there. So that might require starting Nagby because he can hold the ball in tight spaces, even if you think his defensive work rate and maybe his positioning sense isn't as good as some of the other players. Maybe that involves a Christian Pulisic getting a start in Wood's place because he can stretch the field. He can push into wide areas. There's a lot for Jurgen Klinsmann and his staff to consider, but you're right. Matchups, one-on-one, 10v10 field players, Argentina wins just about every battle.
Yeah. One position that I guess, now that we were talking about it, that I can think about, Robert, is one flaw I guess I saw in Argentina was I often saw space between Otamendi and Rojo. And I feel like if we can get Dempsey the ball in a good space with some good crossing, and that will rely heavily on the likes of Yedlin and maybe some set pieces from Michael Bradley, who has some very good set piece delivery, that's an area that the U.S. men's national team can look to exploit.
Yeah, the question is that the kind of we see a piece of a paintbrush in the Mona Lisa kind of flaw, where it's like, it doesn't really matter, does it? I do think that this Argentina team, as well as they're playing, does have some flaws. And like Hartig said, with the suspensions, it's going to be very hard for the U.S. to exploit them. So here's what I'm – my thought on this match is.
Lead us, Robert. Lead us.
This is the defeatist attitude coming in. Since it doesn't matter the result, I think it's been made pretty apparent that for Jurgen Klinsmann and the progress of the national team, the U.S. soccer doesn't consider this a must win. What does it hurt to try some things out, like bringing in a Pulisic, which, as you all know, I've been against starting from the beginning, but trying some things out, putting some of these young players out there and saying, you know, you're facing a really good team. You might have the explosiveness, the creativity that you could allow us to hang in this game, or at least cause a threat, exploit some of that space, or win those free kicks that we might not otherwise get, and give Michael Bradley a chance, or whoever a chance, to create some chaos in the box and score some goals. What if we throw some of these younger players on there and say, you know what, you bomb out here, it's not the end of the world, we did well, we lost to a good team. Let's see if we can and create some magic here. That might not be a bad strategy to sit there and say we might lose 7-0. Not that that would happen in this tournament, but it doesn't matter. Jurgen Klinsmann is going to keep his job. Let's get creative and let's try and see some players go up against some of these best players in the world and see what happens. It might be ugly, but it might be create some magic. Who knows?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, Karthik, because with the amount of our analysis has changed about Klinsmann, it would be a brave decision to play those players, because if things go south, then as Robert alluded to, a 7-0 win loss might happen. We might be arguing that Klinsmann threw the young guns like Pulisic and Nagby and Zardes to the Wolves, and that it was poor management. So it's an interesting hypothetical, isn't it?
Right. I doubt the U.S. loses 7-0, and I think, in fact, perhaps Mexico losing 7-0 has given Klinsmann the flexibility to do what Robert said. So now the U.S. has gone further than Mexico in the tournament. That's the barometer all of us judge the U.S. by, and it's because even though the U.S. regularly beats Mexico in the CONCACAF region and gets results against Mexico, it seems like in major tournaments, Mexico tends to do better. Or at least, even if they get to the same stage, they tend to look better in the process. So I think that's a major hurdle off of Klinsmann's or major weight off of Klinsmann's back, a major hurdle he crossed in this tournament. That having been said, you're at home, and there is really no excuse to feel like we're overwhelmed. We're going to get beat 4-0, 5-0. This is a situation where if you manage the game properly, you manage expectations properly, and you manage your players in a way that makes sense, then you have a chance. So I think it's a tough decision, because your point is very well taken, that if you throw Nagby, Pulisic, those sorts of players out there, you might be throwing them to the Wolves if things go exceptionally bad. However, at the same time, it gives you an opportunity to really throw some of the guys that are going to be critical in Russia in 2018 in the pressure cooker of a game like this, with the crowd in a frenzy, no doubt, in Houston, and with a national television audience and people talking about it around the country, people who don't normally watch soccer. So if you're looking at a real at this game, it's a real opportunity for the United States, a real opportunity, even if you lose, to bloodlet guys and simulate the kind of pressure they are not going to feel again until the 2018 World Cup. Sorry, CONCACAF qualifying. I know there are all these apologists for the U.S. and for the U.S. men's national team who say, well, teams in Europe don't have to go down to Honduras to qualify. No, they have to go to places like Montenegro and Romania, where the crowds are tougher and the teams are better. So you don't simulate this sort of atmosphere and this sort of pressure unless you're playing outside the CONCACAF region. This is the last competitive match the United States might play outside the CONCACAF region until Russia 2018. So that means guys that you don't think are going to be around in 2018, like Kyle Beckerman, great servant to the cause. Jermaine Jones is suspended, so he's out. Maybe you roll the dice. Maybe you play Perry Kitchen. And because you think he's going to be a part of what you're doing in 2018, maybe you play Darlington Nagby instead of Graham Zusi. Graham Zusi could still be around in 2018, but he may not be. Maybe you play someone else on the back line, although Yedlin is back, so I think that situation resolves itself, right? Yedlin is back from suspension.
Yeah.
So I think the U.S. has to look at this as an opportunity. And Jurgen Klinsmann, the pressure is off, right? Should it be off? That's debatable. I think he set a very low benchmark to get to the semifinal, and he's done that. So I guess the pressure is off. But look, this is an opportunity. And when we look back at the Klinsmann years and his tenure, and we write the postmortem on his legacy, this game might factor into that. Did the U.S. give it a go? Did they give it a fight? Or did they play very meekly and lose 4-0?
Yeah, and my final thoughts on this are key matchups. You talked about Yedlin. It could be Di Maria. He might be fit. It could be Gaetan. It could be Lamela he comes up against, but it's going to be one of those three. And he actually had a good game up against Lamela when Tottenham played Sunderland. But outside of those matchups, the other big one is, of course, the player of the tournament so far from a U.S. men's national team perspective, and that's John Brooks. How he handles the movement of Higuain, whether he man marks Higuain or if he goes with Messi. And if he goes with Messi, the fact that Messi drops as far deep as the halfway line, does that destroy the structure of the U.S. defense? So there's a lot of tactical things that Klinsmann would be.
This is why it's so such a nuisance for the United States to be without Jermaine Jones in this match. I think Jermaine Jones could have done a lot of shadowing of Messi, could have done a lot of that type of work. Instead, now is that going to become Michael Bradley's responsibility? Is that going to be Kyle Beckerman's responsibility? I don't trust either one of those guys as much as Jones in that role. So
you don't think Kyle Beckerman can keep up with Messi? That's insane.
All right, gentlemen. I'm not saying Jermaine Jones could either, but he's a vet. He's a grizzled veteran of European football.
And he has speed. He's
speed, still fast. Right. And he reads the game better than Beckerman or Bradley does, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. All right, gentlemen, before we go to the other semifinal, let me tell you about our sponsor, SeatGeek. Have you ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online? Most sites make it complicated, and they all try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you should need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, gentlemen, and I just used the other day to look at tickets for a concert in Chicago. And I found it very easy because they put all the tickets into one place, so you save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will allow you to know if ticket prices fall. So it's a good way, So it's a good way to keep track of those pricey tickets. And then best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. Unlike StubHub, they show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to trick you with huge fees on the checkout page. And my listeners get a $20 rebate off of their first SeatGeek purchase. And this is how you do that. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app. You go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. You enter the promo code WSTPOD, and then SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So what are you waiting for? Download the free SeatGeek app today and enter promo code WSTPOD. All right, gentlemen, let's talk about the other semifinal, which will be Colombia versus Chile. So let's talk about Colombia first, Robert. Colombia versus Peru. It was a game that went to PKs, but I think what's important to note is that it was a game of few chances for either team, but the chances did tend to fall to the same players that we usually think of in terms of James hitting the post, in terms of James and Cuadrado linking up. So those are the players that will be the focus for the semifinal.
Yep, and I think those are the players that Colombia needs going forward to play as well as possible in order to get past a tough matchup. So to see them play well in this match, even though they didn't result in a goal in regular time, was good. So that's a positive. The other positive is, I mentioned, I think early on in this podcast, David Ospina. You know, he hasn't had his stinker yet, and he made a kind of a lucky save in the shootout. And I think he has the quote of the tournament so far, at least in my mind, is when asked about the save, he's like, what matters is to stop the ball with the ears, the nose, whatever. We goalkeepers have many resources. So I'm looking forward to him making a save in the next match with his nose and seeing how that works out for him.
Kartik, let's talk about David Ospina. In some ways, this was the day or the 2 days of keepers who don't represent their clubs that are representing the national team. We saw Romero do well. We saw Ochoa, who we'll talk about next, kind of fail, not do so well. And Ospina, who made, I think, 3 or 4 appearances for Arsenal, came up big in this game.
Yeah, great save in stoppage time to keep Peru off the board and save the opportunity to go to the quarterfinals, right? Peru wins the game right there and then, because keep in mind the Copa we don't have extra time. Right. So Ospina is the latest in a long line of Arsenal goalkeepers making an impact in this tournament. We saw Wojciech Szczęsny start the first game against Northern Ireland for Poland, then give way to Fabianski, his former Arsenal teammate and competitor. Petr Cech has had a fairly good tournament for the Czech Republic, and Ospina with Colombia. It seems Arsene Wenger can certainly find goalkeepers that are at a high level. And I think Ospina is a really high level keeper. It's just Petr Cech is a next level keeper, right? He's one of the 10 best keepers in the world.
Definitely.
I don't think that him not playing is a statement at all about him as a goalkeeper. And as far as Romero, I think we've had this conversation before that Romero, he doesn't need to play in order to be good for Argentina. Yeah. He has consistently shown throughout his club career he can come in without playing and be good for Argentina. When we get to the Mexico game, we're going to have to talk about Memo Ochoa, who is not playing at Malaga, right. And it showed.
Absolutely, yeah. Sam Kelly made that point very eloquently about Romero, so that's well taken. Guys, let's talk about the other game. Let's talk about Chile, Mexico. Robert, this was, I have to admit, I was one of many people who thought Mexico was favorites going into this game. Not Karthik, he actually predicted on a show that actually hasn't aired yet, which is The Front Three, that he thought Mexico would lose to Chile and Chile and Argentina would be the finalists. So as always, Karthik, you're right and we hate you for it. but Robert, talk to me about this game. As soon as the second goal went in, I thought the game was over because this is how I watched the game. The first goal goes in, that sort of thing happens, you lose defensive structure. Mexico were excellent for a good 25, 30 minutes. And then I think it was a Sanchez who scored the second goal. And when it was just before halftime, and you kind of knew that the game was over because you could see the body language of the Mexico players walking towards the tunnel, and it didn't look good.
Yeah. You know, I was doing a radio spot on Saturday, and I told the host, I said, this match will probably be better than any of the Euro matches this weekend. And, well, that was a poor prediction on my part.
Well, it sort of was if you're a Chile fan.
That's true. In terms of just utter being flabbergasted, this was one that we won't see for a while. You know, my thing with Mexico is they're a team that can check out at times. You know, I mentioned this in their first match of this tournament where it seems like they checked out for a good, 30 minutes or so and allowed Uruguay to almost sneak back in and steal a point, or actually all 3 points in their match. And when faced with a Chile team, which the attack was just relentless. I mean, it was clinical. It was, you know, just beautiful. It was the kind of thing that I stop and show my daughter to show her how to play soccer and, you know, make passes and dribble. It kind of was expected that second goal, once that went in, you could see that this was probably going to be Mexico quitting. I didn't think they'd quit as badly as they did. I thought that it would be they would at least try and make an effort. But as the game went on, you could just see them just check out. They utterly checked out of this. And I think that's disappointing because for all of the good that they've done over the past year or so, building this team and the good that they did in this tournament, what's going to linger is kind of, you know, with Brazil in the last World Cup, what lingers is the beatdown. And I think that's going to color this team more than it probably should. We'll see how good Chile is in about a week or week and a half or so. If they win this tournament, they'll look really, really good. But this result might be not representative of where Mexico is right now, but because of the way that they went on the pitch after the first half, it's going to define this team more, and I think, than it should.
Karthik, that allows me to transition into what I want to ask you, because Robert hints at it there. We can talk about the feelings of Mexico, or we can talk about how good Chile was. And where we should start the conversation with Chile was that they have underwhelmed in the tournament so far. And I want to hear from you, how much of this do you see in terms of the fact that Chile managed to find the pieces to fit together, that the tactical systems fell into place, they broke very well, counterattacked very well through the likes of Sanchez, and how much of it is solely to the fault of a very, very poor performance from Mexico's defense?
I think it's a little bit of both. Now, they're still reeling from the loss of Sampoli, and Pizzi has come in, and there's a natural kind of adjustment period, regression period, and it's taking place in World Cup qualifiers, two World Cup qualifiers in March, and then a major tournament, a Copa America. There's no real kind of friendlies or those sorts of things to make this transition. So it was a bit awkward, right? Obviously, the timing of how things went down. You add to that that Chile has one of, at least at the club level, one of the five best goalkeepers in the world in Bravo, and he makes a couple of really uncharacteristic mistakes in the group stage. And the types of mistakes you don't expect to see him make in consecutive games at the club level, that he never makes in consecutive games at the club level. So you add that, and then you're thinking, gosh, you know, Chile is underwhelming. Alexis Sanchez looks off the pace a bit. Vidal is coming off a long season. He's at Bayern now. Obviously, Vidal has has previously played in Germany, right? He played for Leverkusen for several seasons, but there was, I think, a bit of an adjustment for him to play at Bayern and play with the players he was playing with. Very good at times, but kind of less consistent than he had been at Juve the previous season. So there were all these question marks about them, but now we are in a position where we see the team beginning to click. And when you have a Vargas up front, when you have a Vidal, when you have an Alexis Sanchez who runs the channels and is one of the most undefensible players in world football when he's on. And we even see this with Arsenal when he misses chances. It's just he gets into space and his combinations with Ozil are so – the 1-2 game is so pretty with the, right. with those guys. And sometimes Ramsey's in the middle of that, and it's very good. When these guys are clicking, Chile is very tough to stop. And I have to say I worry a bit for Argentina because there's this expectation that they're going to win this tournament. They didn't make it last year. Chile is tough. And the thing that we saw again yesterday is that now there's a desire. There was this kind of mentality after they got that first goal. And you're very right in saying that until that point, Mexico was probably the better side. They were very much on top. This desire to win the ball back, to keep going, to snuff out any space. It was almost like the Gary Medel we talk about is this kind of this pit bull, this Robbie Savage type player. There were almost like four or five of those guys at the back for Chile in this match. So the determination that they demonstrated in this match, and maybe they're getting settled with PZ, you couple that with the quality they have, it's hard to see them losing. And again, we're probably going to have the second consecutive Copa, I think, with the same finals matchup, because the way Colombia has played in this tournament, I just think Chile is far superior to them right now. Colombia has not played particularly well for me since about the 60th minute of the opening game against the United States. Yeah. They didn't play well against Paraguay. I think they were very fortunate to win that match. I thought Paraguay were the better team for me, especially from about minute 30 on. Costa Rica was the better team. I think Peru had a game plan that allowed Colombia to create more chances in the quarterfinal, but Peru very easily could have won that match. So I don't know. I think we're looking at Chile winning that semifinal.
Yeah, I think Chile are favorites as well, obviously based on this. But I think there's one area that Colombia will be looking at that they could exploit Chile in, and that's the cross-field pass. Because Chile played this defensive style where the three players, the fullback, one of the three midfielders, as well as the forward, kind of blitz defense whoever's in midfield on the opposition. It's like the old school NFL blitz defense. They literally converge on him on all sides. If at that moment you can switch the ball over to a winger, you're going to find a lot of space on the opposite wing. And in Cuadrado, Colombia have exactly that sort of winger who hugs the touchline, who can bring the ball down, who can run at pace, who can run at defenders. So in my opinion, if Colombia can exploit that one issue, I think, with the Chile midfield defense blitz, the switch ball, then I think Colombia have a chance. Or else, if Chile play like the way they did against Mexico, there's no other outcome than a Chile win. Gentlemen, let's move ahead now. Let's actually talk about the European Championships. Robert, let's start with you. The Group A games are now complete. France has won the group. Switzerland is second. Albania third. They have 3 points and a goal difference of -2. And that becomes important as we go along in terms of which one of the third place teams qualifies. Romania has been eliminated. And the crazy result from today was Albania actually beating Romania, a 1-0 win. I think it's important to note, Robert, that before this game, Albania had two shots on goal in the previous two games. Today they had a couple of shots, one of them was a goal, and it was led by a very strong defensive performance by the two players who played together at Napoli.
Yeah, and this is the game that I chose to watch, and it was one of those games where if the tournament wouldn't have expanded, I think it would have been a less inspiring and less interesting game.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, Albania actually had something to play for besides the fact that they were, would have scored their first goal in a major tournament and all that. And it would have been, instead of a nice story, they actually were playing for a potential advancement. Now, as you noted, with the goal difference, it's probably not, it's going to be tough to happen, but it did add some passion for both sides on the pitch, and it was a good one to watch. It was nice to see this team score, nice to see the celebration afterwards, and to see them do something in a major tournament. And I think that kind of added to this this group a little bit and make the match a little bit more interesting. But in terms of overall group, France did what they needed to do. They won the group, you know, finished first. Switzerland advances as they should with their talent. And then, you know, you have the nice Albania story. Sorry, Romania, this wasn't meant to be for you guys. And but the group played out as I think everybody thought it would, except for maybe 3 and 4 switching. But, you know, everybody seemed to do what they needed to do except for poor Romania.
Yeah. Last time the Euros were held in France, Romania went out in the group stages. So history just repeated itself. Karthik, another good game from a couple days ago was the Spain win against Turkey. We had talked about Spain underwhelming as they continued to do in attacking positions. But in this game, they actually dominated the game for the most part. And we're actually hearing about some falling outs in the Turkey camp with Turan not getting along with the manager and things of that sort. But the focus has to be Spain here in what was a very comfortable 3-0 win.
Yeah, very comfortable. I think Spain did the business. The movement was good. The passing was good. Everything was very crisp. There's been a lot of concerns about the Spain team and Del Bosque maybe not turning the page on some of the players as quickly as he should have. Yeah, and the continued problems up top, Morata, Nolito. Why didn't you bring Diego Costa? But I thought it was a good win. This group now is in complete flux because we don't know what's going to happen with Croatia as we record this. And I know we're going to get to that in a little bit, the whole fan angle. But there remains an opportunity, I think, for Spain to repeat win their third successive European championship. They played that well because there isn't anyone who stood out for me in this tournament yet, other than Italy. Spain is a team that's looked the second best. I think France very fortunate to have 7 points. One note on Group A, Sanya was lucky he got away with a shirt tug at the end of that match. I think Switzerland should have had a penalty in stoppage time. They bury that, they win the group. France was fortunate against Albania. We know that Albania gave them all they could for about 89 minutes. Romania gave them all they could for about 89 minutes. So you take Payet out of the mixer and you're looking at a France team as hosts with all this talent that are really struggling, which is why there's been this just kind of very lazy analysis to write off Spain. And I don't want to do it. I'm not going to do it because I think they are very good at getting results even when they don't play well. The one thing I have to say, though, is that they don't have a player. Koke is not the same kind of player as a Xavi Alonso. And that part is irreplaceable, it seems, in Del Bosque's setup.
Well, what about Busquets? He might not have his passing range, but
he doesn't have his passing range. Mm. Is what I was.
But if you could combine Busquets and Iniesta, I guess yeah, you're right. It's not as good as a Xabi Alonso and a Xavi. Yeah, I guess that's true.
Right. So they've taken a step back in midfield. There's no question about it, but they're still so good. Look, I don't want to. I know we're going to talk about Ronaldo in a little bit, but Xavi Hernandez, to me, Xavi. We talk about Messi and Ronaldo. I don't know why it hasn't been a three-person conversation all these years, with Xavi being that third. But maybe he's the distant third. But he's the other great player, and you see when he's no longer in a Spain side, how the passing and the movement is still real good, but it doesn't seem as effortless as it did with him. And it's the same thing with Barcelona. It doesn't seem as effortless as it did when he was there.
Yeah, I think you have to build a system around players like that, right? When you have Xavi, you're allowed to be a little more ponderous because he can play, he can dictate the play, he can play a pass through. But when you have someone like Iniesta, who can give you maybe a little less possession stability, but can arguably play more cutting final passes, then you build a slightly faster system. And I think that's what Barcelona did, and I think that's what Spain are trying to do, because they realize that you might not have 99.9% of the possession with Iniesta controlling that midfield as you did with Xavi. You might have 70%, but you're probably going to create a little bit more. So, yeah, that's an interesting point. The next game Spain plays is against Croatia. Spain is currently on 6 points, Croatia on 4, and Czech Republic and Turkey looking like both of them would probably go out. They actually play each other, and I think that'll be a draw, which will eliminate both of them almost certainly. Gentlemen, let's talk about the next game that I wanted to discuss, which was the Germany-Poland game, Robert. When we talked about this game, we kind of briefly previewed it. We talked about the key personnel in terms of the likes of Neuer, Lewandowski, and, you know, we can name off, rattle off the names of that German team. But the point is that that Germany team did not click the way we expected to. I personally thought that Poland could have had a could have actually created a little bit more. I thought Lewandowski missed a couple of chances. So we talked about this very briefly in the last review, but I think this game is worth revisiting.
Yeah, you stole some of my good points on that one, because I agree with you 100%. The power of the microphone.
The power of host.
Exactly. Here's a ranking. I don't always agree with what's said on television analysis, because I think it can sometimes get a little bit lazy. But Michael Ballack said an interesting something after this match, and he said, "Germany, we usually take the second game off," and it's like, okay. But if you think about it, you know, yeah, Germany did look off. The passing looked a little bit. They didn't look like they were clicking. It didn't look like this German machine that we're used to seeing and talking about. But at the end of the day, they got a draw. They got what they done what they needed to do. I don't think there's any injuries if I could think of coming out of this match. They did what they needed to do. They got a point and they moved on. Now, was it beautiful? Was it fancy? Was it, you know, something that people will write sonnets about? No. Could they have played better? Yes. Were they lucky that Poland didn't convert? Lewandowski didn't convert some chances? Absolutely. But I didn't feel like that they were outclassed in this match, and they got it done, and they'll move on. And you know, if they do this in a couple of rounds, then you should worry. But
They're still on top of that group. But Karthik, you talked about Xabi Alonso, and it's like if you look at that Bayern team, Xabi really adds a little bit of an element in there. Whereas with this German team, you can say that they're missing a fully fit Schweinsteiger, they're missing that Xabi Alonso type player who would be playing at Bayern. But the point is that Khedira in particular, I think, has been found out in many games. I know he was one of the stars of the World Cup, but this Euros he has underwhelmed.
No, he's been – I had this conversation with someone last night. I think Khedira is well off the pace. He's been exposed in the first two matches of this tournament, and he's got Northern Ireland coming at him next, assuming he starts, right? They've got Northern Ireland who have done some interesting things in that central midfield area in this tournament. So that's another challenge for Khedira. Schweinsteiger looks well off the pace, and that's coming off an injury-plagued season with Manchester United. The fullbacks, they got away with playing four central defenders in the World Cup.
Right.
But at times, they were opened up. They were opened up against Ghana. They were opened up against Algeria in the quarterfinal or round of 16. And then we're pretty settled from that point forward. But I'm seeing some of those problems again with playing guys as outside backs that are natural center backs. I thought that Poland were able to create some opportunities by putting the ball in wide areas, having players make diagonal runs from wide areas and not be picked up, confusion on the German back line. So that's a concern. They don't have Philipp Lahm playing either at right back, obviously, or in that Xavi role or Xabi Alonso role to move the ball around. There's a lot about this German team I don't like. And they don't have an out-and-out striker that can score goals. So perhaps if they weren't Germany, we would be writing this team off, and we probably should. However, they are Germany, and there's a mentality that gets them through these tournaments. But I look at this German team, and it's almost like 2014 was the end of an upward crest when they were very good in the 2008 Euros. They were very good. They were the best team in the 2010 World Cup, but got beat by Spain in the semifinals. 2012 Euros should have been their tournament, but Balotelli had a masterful game against them in the semifinal. They could have won four tournaments in a row. The only guy right now playing at a really, really advanced level is Mesut Ozil. The rest of the German team, I think, is maybe it's what Ballack said. They're taking the second game off. They took the first game off and somehow got through it because Ukraine is that poor. But I don't like what I see from them, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? We can also almost make that argument we were making about Chile with them, that in some ways they're one excellent game away from hitting form, but they're also one game away from being absolutely abject. So I think the next game is important to them, even though I think regardless of what happens, they will qualify. But I think it's important for them to at least have a good performance, have the likes of Götze and Ozil get on the ball and try to deal with the fact that they don't have a Miroslav Klose up top.
Is a dangerous game for them because Northern Ireland has a lot of relief right now. Right. Michael O'Neill's got that team playing well. I think there were points in the Poland game where they didn't play well, but they were good at portions in that game. They were very good against Ukraine, very compact. And then once they got to a certain point in the game, they were able to get the ball into wide areas and do the sorts of things that we saw Poland do against Germany. So I think it's a dangerous game. I don't think Northern Ireland will win, but Northern Ireland gets a draw, they go through. They might go through with a 1-0 loss. So Germany is going to be tested. They're playing against a team that has a lot to play for and a team that now, after being starstruck in the first game against Poland, now they're comfortable in a major tournament. Yeah. And Germany is they need to make a statement against Northern Ireland, and I don't think they will, quite frankly.
Oof. We'll find out, guys. And let's talk about a team that did make a statement, Robert. Belgium, after everything that we've – I think it's the Eurocopa podcast. As soon as we criticize a team, it does well. So we should take all the credit for this performance, Belgium beating Ireland 3-0. And it was buoyed by something that we talked about last time, the fact that players – for at least 30-40 minutes did hold their positions. You saw De Bruyne hold his position. You saw Hazard actually play less of a free role. You saw Lukaku not drop way too deep. And those things contributed to what was a comfortable win.
Yeah, it's amazing what happens when players play up to potential and a team actually plays like they're supposed to. It was interesting to see what the response was, because this match was almost is Italy that good or was Belgium that bad? And it kind of turned out to be a little bit of both. But Belgium just kind of turned it on in the second half. And my question going into this game was, you know, you had a manager who was known for motivating players, but the body language and the play from their first match was so poor that if that was what Wilmots brought, then they were in trouble. Mm-hmm. It looked like his formula worked in this match against an Ireland team that we knew would have troubles coming in to this group. So, you know, good for Belgium. It was a good win. They looked like the machine everybody thought that they would be. So they got the points they needed. We'll see what happens, though, for the next match. I think based on this, they'll be fine. This is hopefully the wake-up call that they needed. Sweden in the next match is – Sweden's got all kinds of troubles right now. They have the dangerous player, Ibrahimovic, but
who was that?
He's some guy that plays for Europe somewhere.
Okay. There it is a lot. Then.
But exactly. So I think this might be the kind of match that we turn around and say, okay, this is where they turned it on if they continue to advance and play well.
Kartik, Belgium just needs a point against that Ibra-led team. And we talked about how we felt about Sweden. Can you see Sweden actually beating Belgium? Because in that case, Belgium goes third.
No, I think maybe Belgium got the wake-up call they needed from all of us and from not just us. I mean, everybody.
It was us. It was us.
You know, it was everybody.
Take the credit.
I haven't seen such a reaction universally, because international football is a very parochial thing, right? So the media is very parochial to their countries, or they follow the countries they're assigned to cover. I think because we had all put so much stock in this Belgian golden generation.
Right.
It's just the era we live in. There was such scorn heaped on Mark Wilmots after Monday, and you heard it on our show about and other appearances I've made, radio appearances I've made in the last week about how this was such a disappointment. This team is a disaster. These players are all selfish. They're not tactically disciplined, and voila, completely different in this match. I think the incorporation of Moussa Dembélé really helped them, and then I would also say that putting De Bruyne centrally and allowing him to kind of combine with Lukaku, and he's closer than to Hazard. They don't have to keep pushing in and getting out of position. was very, very useful. I felt bad for Marouane Fellaini because I think he was one guy who did play well in the first game against Italy. But I guess if you're going to showcase your best players and put them in the positions where they can succeed the most, you had to drop him. And I think Carrasco gave them some width, the width they were lacking and the disciplined width that they were lacking in the first game. So, no, I think Sweden will probably get wiped out man, I'm back on the bandwagon, guys. It's crazy. International football can change one result. But, God, honestly, guys, just watching that second half, you see how good Belgium can be. Yeah. And you realize that player for player, they are still better than any other team in this tournament. Now they just have to do that consistently because they can still win this tournament. They're going to get out of the group. That's all they needed to do, right? They're not going to win the group. Italy's already won the group. But they could still win this thing.
Karthik, I'm going to stick with you to talk briefly about Group F, because this is the group that has defied analysis and it's produced some exciting results, but some very poor football. Currently, Hungary are in first with 4 points. Iceland and Portugal are second and third, respectively, with 2 points each. And Austria are in the fourth place with a point. Karthik, Portugal played out a 0-0 draw against Austria. And regardless of what Cristiano might say, the things he said after the Portugal draw against Iceland, he himself has struggled in this tournament. And more so than him, I have been very disappointed by this Portugal team. I think Nani's few minutes here and there aside, there hasn't been a single player in this team that can say that they're playing for the shirt right now. It looks disjointed, it looks passionless, and it looks directionless.
Yeah, Nani's the only guy that's looked good at times, and it's only been at times, right? He's been inconsistent, but he's shown some flashes. He's made some very smart runs, took his chance well in the first game. Austria, by the way, I think has been the absolute worst team in this entire tournament. Mm-hmm. I know there are other teams with no points, and they got this point against Portugal because of Portugal misfiring, but what a disappointment they've been. If we weren't talking about Portugal, we'd be talking about Austria and how bad Austria has been and how toothless they are and why they have a lob of another piece of analysis. I don't agree with everything on television also, like Robert. Another interesting piece of analysis from Michael Ballack is why is Alaba playing so far forward where he doesn't see enough of the ball? And Ballack said that about three times yesterday on our broadcast here in the United States. And I agree with that because Alaba is absolutely worthless in this setup. Portugal, gosh, I mean, it could still be Ronaldo's tournament. I think there's so much pressure on him and so much expectation on him. And this started right after a Champions League final where he played very poorly. There's just something not right. And they've got they've now got to win this game against a Hungarian team that is very confident and a Hungarian team, I think, that has kept the ball extremely well in their first two matches. Now, granted, Austria, I've already said, is probably the worst team in this tournament, believe it or not, even though coming in, some people thought they were outsiders, the dark horse that could really make a strong run. And Iceland got ahead in that match and sort of were on the back foot after that. But I think Hungary has shown us a lot in that midfield. And Portugal may not get the number of opportunities against Hungary based on how well Hungary's kept the ball, how well they've kept their shape in their first two games, as they did against Iceland and as they did against, especially against Austria. So they better take their chances in this game. And that means Cristiano better stay on side, and if he's got a chance in the air, he's got to nail it. Put away penalties, take some inspiration from his teammate Gareth Bale, and you get a free kick in dangerous area, put it on frame, make the goalkeeper work. He hasn't done that yet. He hasn't done that in this tournament at all. I mean, if you want to, I thought this was going to be a tournament where potentially Real Madrid's two big guns, Ronaldo and Bale, were going mano a mano. And I said that on one of our shows earlier. Bale's been very good. We're going to talk about Wales in a few minutes. Ronnie, he hasn't shown up.
Yeah, I dare you, Karthik. I dare you to walk up to Cristiano and tell him to get inspiration from Bale. I absolutely dare you. But all right, let's go ahead.
Because of the criticism, he will now be play at a higher level, as you've said before. Once you get criticized on the podcast, you go.
That's true.
So you're welcome. Thank yous.
You're welcome, Cristiano. Robert, let's talk about Group B. Russia plays Wales tomorrow in what will almost certainly be a game that will be discussed with the lens of off-field stuff more than what actually happens on the pitch, because I think barring a comfortable win for Russia, they are out of this tournament. Wales needs a draw, and realistically, even if they lose tomorrow, they might actually go through to the next round. So talking to you about what do you see in this game? Because outside of the Bale factor, do you see other positions or other tactical matchups that are crucial to whatever result you predict?
Yeah, I think we've seen Aaron Ramsey play very well so far in this tournament. I think he's a critical player for this for Wales going forward, not only in this match. It's hard to talk about this with some of the off-the-field stuff going on and you know what the atmosphere is going to be like and everything like that. But I think if you look at Wales, disappointing result against England. How did they shake that off and come back out and play against a team they should beat? I think if you have Gareth Bale playing the way he is, you have the Wales midfield playing as well as it could, you keep having Aaron Ramsey making those link-up plays and connections, then I think they'll be fine and they'll advance as they should. The key is just to see how do they respond. How do they play against this Russia team? And do they look like the Wales team that we're kind of expected, which is a pretty good team that could cause some trouble in the later rounds?
Karthik, I'll have you expand on Russia-Wales a little bit, but I want to focus on talking about Slovakia-England as well. We will continue to talk about the off-field stuff, but England need a draw to pretty much guarantee that they'll win this group, barring Wales beating Russia.
Wales beating Russia, right.
Yeah, and from that perspective, you can almost see, given the way England play, it is going to be a draw, and it's going to be a boring game that probably ended in 0-0.
Right, but I think Roy Hodgson, now knowing he's got 4 points, has an opportunity to rotate his squad, use some of the players we have not yet seen play critical roles in this tournament, and I think, obviously, calls are very loud, right, for Vardy and Sturridge, but there are opportunities for other guys to play in this match, and I think it would be interesting to see what Ross Barkley might offer. It's interesting to see what Jack Wilshere, if given. I personally don't think Wilshere should be on the team. I think Drinkwater should be there, or Mark Noble. I've been very vocal about that, but since Drinkwater's not there and Michael Carrick's not there, and Wilshere is the guy who's going to play that role, see what he can do from the start and play him 60 minutes. And maybe this is a chance to give Wayne Rooney some rest, because I think he's worn down, and we know he's had some injury problems. This is a tough game, though. Positioning, it depends on how important it is positioning for England to finish first in the group. If that's a moral victory, if that's something that gets them an easier round of 16 matchup. I know there's been some projections that they could actually face Northern Ireland in the round of 16, which would be very, very interesting matchup for all the obvious reasons we don't have to get into here. But the thing I wonder is, you've got to account for Hamsik. You've got to account for the type of movement we saw in the midfield by Slovakia in the victory over Russia. You know, quick kind of pass and move, not as much as many guys just sitting on the ball as we had seen in their first game against Wales. And then the kind of the diagonal runs you've seen from their from Mach and from Vlad Weiss. You wonder if England, this is against a rotate, and if they lose the game, they lose the game. They're going to get 4 points. And or if they go ahead and play for a 0-0 and just move on to the next round. Look, England has not looked good in this tournament. But that having been said, nobody has looked particularly good in this tournament, with the exception of Italy and I think Spain, as I mentioned, and Belgium now maybe getting back to their best. So England likes to use Germany as a benchmark. If you want to use Germany as a benchmark, England's probably played better than Germany in this tournament. Yeah. So maybe they take the draw and they get out, but I'll be interested just to see Hodgson's squad selection, and maybe he'll have an eye on the Wales game, because, of course, if they draw and Wales beats Russia, as I think they should, and as I think UEFA would want them to, then you're in a position where England might finish second or third in the group. So they do need to be careful.
Yeah, if England wins, as Karthik mentioned, they probably will play Northern Ireland, because the winner of Group E plays the best third place team out of Group A, C, and D, which right now is Albania, Northern Ireland, and the Czech Republic. And the way the points are right now, it'll probably be between Albania and Northern Ireland, which means it'll probably be Northern Ireland. So good shout there, Karthik. And we will be back Wednesday, gentlemen, to review the Copa America semifinals, as well as talk about by then the culminated group stages of the European Championships. Until then, on behalf of everyone here at World Soccer Talk, I'm your host Nipun Chopra, and on behalf of Robert Hay, Karthik.
Unless you're Juan Carlos Osorio or a member of the Mexican squad, you're enjoying your football.
Choosing where to go to university is a big commitment.
By choosing to study at the University of Central Lancashire, you'll be choosing a place that will support you as you step into your future.
You'll be choosing a new place to call home.
We see our students for who they are and who they can be.
We see opportunity.
We see potential.
We see you.
There's still time to apply for a degree through Clearing.
Visit uclan.ac.uk/clearing to find out more.